Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, welcome to another Rahulastama. This week with Alice Fraser. Look, I'm up and about. Still in my hospital room. Jeremy Paxman thought that I really had this in my house when I used this as the background for his upcoming episode. It's only pretend. Look, it's not real. Welcome. Anyway, I'm feeling pretty good, all things considered, and on the mend. Rahulastama is continuing despite my recent loss. On Wednesday nights, usually at 8 p.m. Some good guests coming up, including one secret one that I'm not going to put on Twitch. That's just going to drop and you're going to be surprised by, because that's just the kind of guy I am, my fan friends. Yes, do keep supporting the podcast. If you just listen to the audio with the adverts, that's a big help. Or just tell your friends to have a listen. Every single listen counts, my fine, fine friends. You can become a badger at gofasterstripe.com/badges. I don't need to tell you that, you know that. I'm taking a little bit easy, though feeling pretty good on the whole. Anyway, let's sit back, relax, and enjoy Rahulastama with Alice Fraser. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome a man who can't believe he's going to be talking to someone in Australia. It's Richard Herring. Hello, it's me. Welcome to another edition of Richard Herring's Let's See Tomorrow podcast. Because we're going to. It's tomorrow in Australia, and I'm going to find out what's happening in the future. No one has thought about this, but I can find out what the results of sports matches are. I can be like Biff from Back to the Future. And because we can now communicate immediately, I can then go and bet on stuff that hasn't happened here yet. So I'm really excited about that. Though I was hanging around with the Wiggles. I made it very Australian theme today. Who are the, you know, the Wiggles. I don't need to explain them to you who they are. They call it Rahulastama. So I don't know if that's going to catch on. They are generally cool. Emma from the Wiggles, if you're watching, I'm happy to leave my wife and family to spend the rest of my life with you, however long I've got. So don't tell my wife I said that, Emma from the Wiggles. But I think you're great and you've you know, you've livened up the difficult years of childcare. I've said too much. Look, I want to dedicate today's podcast to a great friend of mine, Ian Patterson, who very sadly died this week. He was a writer that we met when we did Weekending, and even though he was like 15 years older than me and Stu, and quite a lot of the people on the Weekending writer staff were suspicious, right, and annoyed by us, rightly, because we were young upstarts. Ian Patterson was always so supportive, and I've seen him over the years, and I'm heartbroken that he's left us. You'd always just see him at the Light Entertainment Christmas parties. We'd always have a chat. And I've put the picture of the Fist of Fun annual up because we liked him so much, we put him on the front cover of the Fist of Fun annual. He's just, that's him with the moustache there. Yeah, I didn't realise he was 15 years older than us. He must have thought we were terrible, stupid children, but it was a horrible time working on Weekending, and working in the same room as Ian was one of the great things. He went on to work on a lot of stuff, but sorry, I haven't a clue. He wrote all of the, like, the Lionel Blair jokes, which are absolutely supreme. So just wanted to dedicate it to him. Look, apart from that, this week, apart from arguing with Apple for about 2 hours, 2 days rather, trying to get them to repair my broken computer, it's been let's not get into it, just in case Apple want to sponsor the podcast at some point, and then there'll be this one, me saying how shit they've been. But in the end, they were good. So thank you to David from Apple, who's helped me out in the end. This week, it was my daughter's birthday, and she got a kite. And we took it out the day after a birthday party to fly it. Like, and I've never actually successfully flown a kite, I don't think. And we didn't really know how to put it together. We didn't know how it worked. It was freezing cold. But we spent 40 minutes together, father and daughter, working on this thing. And that is my daughter. There's a picture if you're watching the video, flying a kite in the sky in the icy winds of Hertfordshire. It was amazing. She was like a natural. She's like, I think she could be a superhero. When I said, how are you doing this so well, she was swooping around. She was making it do all the stuff and stay up there. It stayed up about 4 minutes on this occasion. And she said, the wind likes me and it doesn't like you, Daddy, and that's why I'm doing well. But it was a beautiful, seminal moment of parenthood where we spent 40 minutes together working something out together and made it work. And I'm 53, and I think that's the first time I've ever successfully been in charge of a kite. I may be wrong. And I remember being obsessed with kites as a kid. And my mum and dad don't remember this. I wrote about this in my blog. And my auntie Jean, who isn't my real auntie, who's just a friend of my mum's, because she's called Jean Pickup. That's her name. And we went to the Green Shield stamp shop, which is predates Argos. You kids won't remember any of this. You used to get stamps every time you bought petrol, and you could stuck those in an album, and if you've got another album, you could go and swap them at Argos for some stuff. And I got an orange kite, and I don't remember anything about it apart from getting the kite and the fact that my anti-gene pickup was double parked and stopped by a policeman, and when she told him her name, he thought she was taking the piss and got cross because she thought she was joking that her name was Pickup. That's my kite story. So I hope my daughter remembers this day. It's one of those things that maybe she'll remember this day, actually flying a kite. It was the wind is her friend. What more can you say than that? It was beautiful. So anyway, please keep supporting all the podcasts in becoming a badger. You know how to do that. Or just watch the stuff on Twitch. Some stuff's going on at the moment, and I might not be. I'm going to try and keep Rahulastapa definitely going and the snooker definitely going. Twitch of Fun, episode 30, tomorrow at Thursday, 8 p.m. if you're watching this live. We might take a little break from Twitch of Fun just to reevaluate my life. But we might not. You never know. Thank you very much to everyone who's watching that. Do check it out. It's all on YouTube if you want to catch up. 30 fucking episodes of it. So, look, my guest this week is in Australia. It's where she is. It's not the 17th of February like it is everywhere else in the world. It's the 18th of February, and it's breakfast time. It doesn't make any sense to me. She's probably best known. I put kangaroos in the background. Look at that, especially for her, because it'd make her feel happy. And it's the city. Oh, fucking hell. Why are we living in England? I imagine that's just what all of Australia is like. Some sea and some kangaroos and nothing else. I don't know why I imagine that. I've been there and know it's very different. She is probably best known for her appearances on the Knock Knock episode of Whovian, which I think you probably are all very excited about, aren't you, Doctor Who fans out there? I don't know what it is. Please welcome Alice Fraser, ladies and gentlemen. There she is in Australia.
Hi. Wow. Hello. How are you?
I'm very good. Is it morning there? I know you're very clever, and it's the nighttime here. How does that... We're on the same planet, right? How's that working?
I mean, look, I don't know. I woke up. I pushed some kangaroos out of the way to get to my podcasting studio. I swam across the channel of the beach that I live on to get here. I think it's just the time that it is here, and you're the ones who are a little behind.
Oh, is that it? So, anything good happened? Anything to look forward to on the... I mean, I know it's early on the 18th, but has anything happened this morning there that we can be looking forward to in the news tomorrow?
Well, it's a very nice day here.
Okay.
What you can look forward to from Australia in the news tomorrow is nothing, because Facebook has just banned Australia from posting links or sharing links on Facebook of the news.
Wow.
There was a standoff between the government and between Facebook about whether, basically media regulation, whether Facebook should pay for the use of news media.
Okay.
It's actually a fairly nice principle here. The reason it's come through the government is because it's being funded by Rupert Murdoch, always makes you suspicious of a thing, so you're not quite sure who's on the right side of this ethically, but it looks like no news is good news.
Well, that's also the spoilers, because you're ahead, so it's like, you know, Australians spoil it new year, you spoil it, you get new year first and all the fireworks go off and we go, oh, there's a new year coming, and it ruins it for us, the surprise. So good on Rupert Murdoch.
On the other hand, if you're looking at New Zealand and Australia as like, oh, if the apocalypse is going to happen, it's going to happen here first. Incorrecto. We've managed to dodge.
You've done very well. You were just saying before we came on it. What I like about you and I, Alice, I wanted to say, is that we've probably had three conversations in our lives of any meaningful length, and they've all been recorded for podcasts, and I'm including this one. So what I would quite like is
today.
To never... never meet you outside of a recording situation. Everything, even the things we were talking about beforehand, have been recorded, probably. So I think nearly all of the things we've said to each other, apart from when I passed you in the meadows and went... But then I don't think we even spoke. I passed in the meadows and waved at you before I talked to you on the Edinburgh Fringe podcast. Isn't that amazing? I don't think we should ever actually have a non...
We should never meet unsupervised.
Sure. I mean, maybe that should be the case with all my conversations, especially with women. Just make sure I've got a recording. We were saying how the Melbourne Festival might... looks like it's happening, which is absolutely mind-blowing to me.
Look, I can't believe in it. I feel I have no faith in the Melbourne Comedy Festival happening. It's more than a month away, and at this point, anything that's more than a month away is completely non-existent in my head. So I'm in this odd position of having to plan for it, you know, booking and everything and sort of figuring out advertising and everything while still being almost entirely certain that it's not going to happen.
Yes.
I mean, you know, the moment I locked it in, you know, I sent my email and it was like registration, and they confirmed my registration, and then immediately Melbourne went into a 5-day lockdown.
Yes.
So...
But basically...
They're out of that lockdown now, but, you know, what can happen?
But anything. Basically, Australia's sort of, you're allowed to do stuff, right? You're basically allowed to do... How lockdown is a lockdown, and when you're not locked down, are you able to get to sports events and theatres and things? Is that all?
So this is difficult for me to assess, because in my day-to-day life, I don't go anywhere or do anything.
Okay.
But, so I'm not like, oh my... Classic nightclub night is back again, where I get to grind up against strangers. That is not... I don't know about that. There is some comedy happening. We've been for a month in New South Wales, which is the state I'm in. We've gone for a month with no community transmission, and so we just wear masks on public transport, and other than that, it's fine.
God in heaven. I'm finding this third lockdown in the UK particularly difficult, weirdly. I think it's... You know, it's sort of, I suppose it's the tantalising prospect of, if the kids just went to school, it would be fine. It's having to look after your own kids all the time. That was never the deal. I was happy to get them to five, and then And I've got one to five. One of them's six. One of them's three, but he can go to nursery. And then bang, that's it. I've done my job. And now I've got to carry on.
Yeah, but parenting is a lot harder when you have to ignore your children to their own faces.
It is. But, you know, we're getting by. I just come up in the attic and don't play myself at snook. They're usually asleep. Sometimes they come and join in. It's fun.
I like that. I mean, they're usually asleep when you're playing the snooker, I assume, rather than just as a state of being. My children, how are your children? Usually asleep.
They're usually asleep when I do my podcasting stuff, which is in the evening time. But my daughter, I do a puppet show, Alice. Don't ask. I've started doing ventriloquism of puppets. I mean, you're one person that can't criticise me because you podcast everything in your life as well. And early on, she got very obsessed with the puppets and she would deliberately stay awake and then sneak up. So she's a character in that show because she's sort of behind the green screen. As long as she doesn't actually get in, I've given away it's a green screen rather than me being in Australia. Damn, what a giveaway. No. Tell me about, before we move on, what the Knock Knock episode of Whovian was. Do you remember being on Whovian?
I do remember being on Whovians, which is a sort of a post-Doctor Who, you know, chat about it show here in Australia. And they brought me on, I assume, because they were looking for female Doctor Who fans. And I would not necessarily categorise myself as a female Doctor Who fan. I've watched some Doctor Who and I thought it was fine. No offence to people. The problem is not that I don't like Doctor Who. The problem... No, I will explain and you will forgive me. My problem is I do not watch television on my own ever. So I was brought out without television, so it never occurs to me to watch television. So my television watching is entirely dictated by the tastes of whoever I'm with at the time. So if we get three episodes into, so for example, I was watching The Handmaid's Tale, whatever it's called, with a friend, and we got three episodes in, he's like, I can't stand the distress of women and children. It's not my bag, which is weird because his favourite kind of shows are all like sad sex workers of the cocaine underworld. You know, he likes those kind of documentaries. Anyway, they couldn't handle Handmaid's Tale. And so my reaction was not, oh, well, I'll watch it on my own. It's like, oh, I'll never see more than three episodes of The Handmaid's Tale. And indeed, I have not. So when I was watching Doctor Who, it was when I was in university and I had a roommate who was a Doctor Who fan, so I watched a bunch of Doctor Who then and I quite liked it and I thought I'd like to keep watching that, and then I finished university and that was the end of that.
It's not that good.
It's a hard life.
I've been in one of the audio adventures. I was killed by a Cyberman, so I'm allowed to be on. I find it too confusing. I don't know how kids like it. I remember watching it when I was a kid and being terrified of it, of course, and being slightly obsessed with Joe.
Terrifying. As a child, terrifying. Yeah.
We tried to watch some with my kids and they were much too scared. I think it's more scary now. But I'm confused about... You've got to concentrate quite hard and it also doesn't really quite make sense because it's made up.
Also always difficult when you have a property that was invented for children being sort of adopted by adults. Because yeah. When you have attention, like, you know, My Little Pony or whatever, when you have a majority adult audience, it changes the vibe.
Wow, we've really lost. We've lost. We had 222 viewers and now we've got five. They've all gone. They've all been very upset by that.
I'm so sorry.
That's all right. I've had a great day. As I said, I do enjoy researching this show every week because I get to listen to loads of stuff that I haven't necessarily always heard and go in depth. And the depth of stuff you do is insane. I thought I did a lot of podcasts. I thought Izzy Lawrence did a lot of podcasts. But you do the most podcasts, I think. You must be the winner of most different podcasts that are running all the time and aren't just nonsense with puppets and playing yourself at snooker is what I do. But they're proper content-filled podcasts.
Yeah, I think I wrote about 60 hours of comedy last year, which is a lot. When you think about it like that, it's a lot. But at the time, it was just 15 minutes a day, so that's doable.
So was that the last post? You did a daily podcast. Well, you explain what it is.
The last post, now running monthly, was a 366-day project, a daily satirical news podcast set in an alternate dimension. And that was a lot of work. And then, of course, because I am incapable of doing things the easy way, I set myself little challenges within that. Like, for example, every day I did a different ad for half a glass of water. And that was delightful. It was an amazing thing because it completely knocked my imposter syndrome on the head. You know, that fear that you have of that's the last joke I'll ever write. I'm never going to write another joke. Just that, to know that you keep digging and keep digging and keep digging at the bottom of the well, when you think the well is dry, there is always another half glass of water.
And presumably you planned to do this before COVID and before lockdown, so it feels like a very lockdown idea,
yes.
But it was just something that caused lockdown, maybe.
I was kicking myself in January and February of last year, just being like, I'm spending so much time writing this stupid show. Everyone else is getting their festival shows ready. I've done one preview. This is dreadful. I'm going to be so far behind for Melbourne. I'm going to be so far behind for Edinburgh. And then all of a sudden, overnight, you know, and I'd be, you know, also the other thing was Savage, my special, was coming out on Amazon Prime in the middle of the Melbourne Comedy Festival, so no one was going to watch it. Overnight, I went from being incredibly, like, worried and frustrated to being the luckiest person in the whole world, and I've not stopped thanking my lucky stars since.
I think it is interesting when you set yourself challenges, and, you know, like with the stupid podcasts I do that are around clearing stones from a field or playing myself at snooker, which are more ad-libbed, I think, than what it sounds like you're doing. But it's like, by limiting yourself almost, you have to be much more inventive in what you're doing, and you will find ways to make it interesting. So even if you've got no real different things happening within the boundaries of the podcast, you'll find a way to make it interesting, and you will find ways to push things onwards. And I presume you created lots of little subplots and catchphrases,
yeah,
or whatever,
that
and that
the,
sort of thing. Just
it
to...
was so interesting. It
yeah.
was so interesting because we recorded four with the same co-host, but they weren't Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. They would be this Wednesday, next Thursday, the Monday after that, and the Friday after that. And so you'd have to have in your head these like timelines of where the fake news in this alternate universe was going to be and where you thought the real news was going to be. Like, it was so much fun. And it was that thing of like, I really believe in creative constraint. I really believe in the power of that for two reasons. First of all, because I think it opens you up to new things. Like, you know, like a sonnet is always going to be more difficult than a free verse, but often will be nicer. But I think also you're running your own race. Like, I don't have enough confidence to think that I'm good at things as a whole.
Sure.
Like, I'm not good at comedy. I'm not a good comedian, but I am the best daily satirical news podcaster in an alternate dimension in the whole world.
Well, the second thing's true. The first thing is not true. The first thing is not true. You are a very good comedian. There's a lot of your stuff. I mean, there's a podcast which are just audio versions of your trilogy of shows, and they're very good.
Yes.
Your TED talk, which obviously uses a little bit from one of those, is just better than any TED talk I've seen, because it's got proper, like, incredibly witty jokes that make really good points in it. It's 10 minutes long and it's properly funny, and then it's properly like, oh God, you know, this is making me think, and this is deep, and this is sad, within 10 minutes, which you also do in all your stand-up shows over a bit of a longer time as well. But now you are, I think, I hadn't seen that much of your stand-up, I have to say, before, and I have largely listened to it. I have watched some of it, and I think you're extremely good. So I won't accept you saying you're not a good comedian, but also do it.
Well,
you know,
thank
but,
you.
But pushing yourself in that way, it's you know, it's interesting. It's interesting to push yourself. Did it drive you slightly mad? Is that why you've gone monthly, or did you just want to carry on? Because it's that Spike Milligan thing of. I did a thing called As It Occurs to Me, where I wrote a brand new stand-up and sketch show every week that we would then record.
Whoa.
You know, rehearse. But then it was we could read it out, but it was, you know, it was an audio only thing. But it was about my life and as much as the news and everything. And that drove me nuts. And I did sort of eight weeks of that in a row. But doing every single day, was it? Did it get you, or was it?
It was liberating. It got to me. The whole project was meant to be for the leap year, 366 days. And now we've gone monthly, mainly because, like, people kept wanting to listen to it. So there's a couple of reasons why we didn't keep doing it more frequently. One is, like, I need a life. The other one is that there was some kind of behind the scenes. Originally it was funded by Sony and something else, and then it got sort of all that kind of complicated behind the scenes stuff that I'm probably not even allowed to mention. And then the other thing is that now I'm doing a different spin-off show, a weekly spin-off show. But yeah, it was we planned it for the whole year, the 366 days. We ended the world on the last day of the year, so now our monthly is set in the post-apocalyptic wasteland, which is also quite a lot of fun. That's its own thing, I think. But yeah, I love creative constraint. I never talk about my relationships on stage, ever. That's a thing. And it means that... And it's mainly because when I first started out, that was very much a trend among the female comedians of Australia. And some of them were doing it brilliantly and others were not doing it well. But it was a commonality, and almost every comedian would come up and say, oh, like, why am I single? Or my boyfriend this, or my husband this. And so I said, I'm never going to talk about any of my relationships on stage ever. And it's been so good, because it just means that you have to think, well, another angle. It can't just be like, how am I feeling today about what my partner or non-partner has done or not done. You just go, okay. Or if they do something, then you have to think of an angle in on it that's more kind of general to humanity, or how to translate it.
Although the stand-up's incredibly personal still, so it is, you know, and obviously a lot of it revolves around your mother, who was ill for a long time and then has now sadly died. But you're very, very open about that. And I mean, that's, you know, again, it's something I'm interested in, and as a comedically, to sort of explore more serious topics through humour, but also to explore your family relationships. And that's, I mean, you do have on the podcast, at least you have your mum being recorded talking about whether she minds you using her life. And it's incredibly important within that first show, what she says, obviously, without giving too much.
Well, so yes, that it was very important in that show that she give consent to me talking about it. But also the challenge for Savage, which is the show you're talking about, was to see actually how much I could convey the emotional reality and how, but without telling that much of the actual story. Like, I never describe my mum. I only quote her once. All of her presence in the show is through her own words, through the recording I have. So it's for me, the show is how much can I give without giving too much away, without exposing my family. For example, my twin brother never appears in any of my comedy. See, he's a massive part of my life, but he's asked not to be in my comedy, and so he's not.
Yeah, I'd put him in if it was me. But I had a version of my brother in something which he really didn't like, so I don't really talk about my brother anymore. So you sort of find it out by doing it, if you do it, you know, the people who like it and the people who don't like it. Even though I was trying to flatter him, he was still annoyed by it. But that's the way these things go. But yeah, it's. I think, I don't know, I say again, I think this was before we started recording, but it's such an intellectual comedy you have, and you seem to have such a grasp of a lot of different subjects, and you seem to have your finger in a lot of facts. I mean, you're interested in facts, it seems to be. You know, the bit about just saying that when you're brushing your teeth, think about that that's the only exposed part of your skeleton, which is such a funny observation, and like something that, it's a really odd way of looking at it, but it's a very true thing when you realise it. It never really occurred to me that until I heard that piece of material.
Yes, in any other context, yeah. That would be a horrifying thing to do. If you had any other exposed bones that you sort of polished daily, you'd be deeply grotesque.
But, you know, it's what you accept, what you don't. That idea that teeth are weird detachable bones is a very good observation. But there's quite a lot of facts and within your work, I think. And you do seem to retain them. You seem to have that. Again, I compared you beforehand to sort of Stephen Fry in terms of, I think, erudition and and sort of recall.
Such a compliment.
Well,
I mean, really, genuinely, when people say, "What do you want your career to look like?" I say, sort of like Stephen Fry's. Although obviously he was far more successful at my age than I am. But just the idea that he can do serious things and be taken seriously, and then do silly things, and nobody thinks the one detracts from the other. The idea of being multifaceted, and not to make it gendery, but like particularly as a woman, often you get women who are playing a particular role. You're the feminist woman, or you're the serious woman, or you're the hot woman, or you're the. There are fewer than I would like of role models of women who have a lot of things going on.
Sure. I thought.
Listen, can I be hot and smart?
I thought it's such a good hour long show. I think all three of them are the first one particularly, I think. But it just, you know, I think also like there's an element with stand up and who gets sort of pulled out and said this is the great stand up. Oh, you're frozen. I don't know if you can still hear me. Are you moving now?
I can still hear you. Yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Yeah. It reminded me of Hannah Gadsby, not that it's the same as Hannah Gadsby, just that I could easily have seen that show being pulled out as being, hey, this is the worldwide smash. And I love Hannah Gadsby and I think her show's amazing. And it's great that that got pulled out, but it was quite an esoteric choice to suddenly be propelled into this worldwide fame. But it seems there seems no distinguishing reason why Savage shouldn't have been pulled out in that same sort of way, I think. Just other than it's sort of chance, you know.
Well, I'm not managed by Token. No, that's a very rude thing to say. Hannah Gadsby's show is brilliant, and I think it was wonderful to be that it was kind of selected as an example of a genre that's existed for a long time. But I think it was the first time the US mainstream,
yeah, I think that's true,
got a hold of this thing, this yeah. kind this of Edinburgh thing, style show, where it's
Edinburgh style show, where it's
an emotional journey as well as just comedy,
which is comedy, which is
by definition in Edinburgh, with so many other shows, it is not enough to just be funny. Because you won't stand
because
out.
You won't stand
if you're just you funny, if you're just funny in your particular way, so that people then remember who to recommend.
I think that kind of cultivates these more storytelling shows a bit more personal, and I think it's a great thing that they're entering the US market.
It is, but it's sort of fun. You know, it's just. I mean, I find this doing this podcast, and you must find it with your podcast where you interview people as well. There's just so many supremely talented people, and a lot of them, if you said their name out in the street, people wouldn't know who they are. And it's sort of but the more I do this, the more I go, and like, almost, you know, in these last few months I've sort of deliberately been getting guests who are doing a lot of stuff online, because I want to sort of be supportive, but also I think it's interesting, and also they're doing really interesting work. But you know, the when you start listening and watching a lot of what people are doing, you go, God, there's so much talent out there, and you know, it's like an iceberg, and the public see like the little tip of the iceberg, or the general public, and then obviously you've obviously built up this big podcast following through all these various podcasts, and presumably you're making a living at it. I hope you are, because you're working very hard. You know, it's both interesting that you can be, you know, that you can have your own little world and most people don't know about it and still be successful. But also it's interesting to me just what it is I think it's just luck, isn't it? It's just sort of happenstance and luck that sometimes throws someone over the top in... I mean, I don't think Hannah would have ever predicted... No one would have predicted, like, doing an Edinburgh show. And you might go, oh, I might win an award. It might get to West End run. You wouldn't think, and then I'll break America and have Netflix specials. You know, it's sort of fantasy stuff, especially I think for someone like Hannah, you know, who wasn't bombing out to do that mainstream show, quite the opposite, was trying to escape from comedy. But you know, what I'm really saying is I just think that for me your show's as good as Hannah's show, you know, and there's no reason why your show is not on Netflix. I know it's on Amazon Prime, but
you know. The thing. I've never been cool. I've never won an award. Any of those things. I always think, and maybe this is just because I've never won an award, I think always when you look at awards, or prizes or recognition, it's very rare that whoever gets it doesn't deserve it.
Yeah.
but there's often maybe 20 or 30 people who would deserve it just as much.
Sure.
And in the end, it's usually about what the award givers or the judges are trying to say about themselves as to who they end up choosing of those 20 or 30.
But then why haven't they chosen you when what that would say about them is, hey, look how clever and smart I am, but also funny. And yeah, it's a really satisfying show to listen to. And it's fantastic that you've put it out as a... I mean, I think it's very generous for you to put it out as a podcast. I'd be interested... Does that work as a... I mean, is it just a nice thing to do, or does it work as a PR thing to bring people to the rest of your work if you've got that as a showcase?
I'm not sure. I mean, certainly it got me the Amazon special.
Sure.
I got the Amazon special from Neil Gaiman listening to the podcast and then recommending me to Amazon. So I think that it worked in that way, sort of in unwittingly. It was not my intent. My intent was... I'm very bad at selling stuff, and I always feel guilty charging money for things, and I really loved those shows. They were, you know, very much kind of very important to me, and I wanted people to see them, I guess. So I thought that would be the least barrier to entry. If you know how a podcast works, then you can get access to them.
I think it's great. I just think it's great. I don't think many people would. I don't know if I would. I mean, I think I have given away. I mean, I've given away so much in podcasts. But I suppose like my feeling early on was I'm doing the podcast so that people will come and see the live show and maybe buy the DVD now download. So it's kind of, you know, But also, there's a part of me that just goes, the reason I got into podcasting was I've got lots of ideas and I'd rather they were out there. And so the idea that you've got a great show, it's sort of better that it's nicer that people are hearing it right or getting to see it. It's kind of
it's that way of you feel like with comedy particularly in the Australian and the UK scene, you have the circuit, the festival annual circuit. And so you're meant to throw a show away into the past and move on and do a new show. And I didn't want that to happen with that trilogy. I wanted them to stand and sort of stand against the tide of time in that way. I didn't want them to feel outdated or like they were, you know, oh, that's the show I did 5 years ago. They still mean something to me. And so I think that was my way of doing that.
Yeah, it's good. Well, it's good. So everyone should. I mean, there's so much to listen to you and. Online, we'll talk about some more of it. I'm going to ask you a couple of emergency questions, just so I'm stop blowing smoke up your ass.
I've got an infestation of wasps, so it's the only way I'm going to get them out. But wasps,
It's a beautiful, beautiful image.
Expressing your love can look many different ways, and with the right jewelry gift from Blue Nile, it can truly sparkle. Blue Nile's collection of classic diamond jewelry makes for the kind of gift that speaks volumes without saying a single word. Or switch things up with a sapphire piece sure to spark conversation. Either way, Blue Nile's diamond guarantee ensures you get the highest quality at the best price. Express yourself with Blue Nile, the original online jeweler, at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
If you could have a sexual superpower, see, beforehand, they were all erudite. Here they come. If you could have a sexual superpower, what would it be?
A sexual superpower, what would it be? That's a very good question. I think it would be sort of like a dashboard where you could see how things were going.
And you can move things around on it with you know, digital rather than imaginary hologram kind of thing. Just so it would be nice to know. I think if you could see into the mind of the, it'd probably be bad.
But not into the mind, no. Because you don't necessarily want that. But into the kind of the arousal landscape. Yeah. And I would like to have that power. And I would like to have that power to give that to the person who was hanging out with me.
If only there was some way to tell them, Alice. If only we could communicate somehow.
I mean, that's too stressful, I think, sometimes. It's too stressful or distracts you, because I feel like, not to get too detailed, as I said, I don't talk about my relationships on stage. But I think that, you know, sometimes you need to concentrate. And telling somebody how things are going requires you to tap into a different part of your mental capacity.
Yes, it's a terrible minefield. I'm glad, you know, in many ways.
It's a terrible minefield.
Once you're married, you're kind of out of it. You know, it's all over. And you hopefully know the person.
What a series of coloured lights and dials that I can use to suggest things. Because, you know, I'm very vocal in my real life.
But yeah, when
to tap out of the vocal sphere.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, I'm 100% with you, and there are just sometimes you're plugging away at something and you think, is this doing it? Is this working? Give me something.
Yeah, and it could be working so well that they can't tell you how
exactly.
Well,
you don't know.
And that telling you how well it's working while soothing your ego would take them off the game of your choice. Slippery dip? I don't know. Merry-go-round? Roller coaster?
But if you could read their mind, it would be fascinating. I think you would never be able to have sex with anyone again, because it would be too horrific what they were thinking, and they'd be thinking about other people.
You know, I do not love the idea that, like, women's sexual response is so complicated and mystical, but at the same time, sometimes I'll be thinking about the ocean.
Okay.
You know, and that's hot. You know, like, but then sometimes it won't be. So I feel like, maybe actually, you know, clockwise on a Tuesday, counterclockwise on a Wednesday, you know, the eagle comes at night. Like, it is, sometimes it's a little bit mysterious.
Good. I will ask you one more emergency question, then I've got to talk to you about more of your work. This question's just popped in mind, but you do have a piece of material that involves this word. What was the last thing that you bleached?
The last thing that I bleached was this very shirt.
Oh, that's
good. I'm not a big, I'm not a personal fan of anal bleaching.
No, well, I know that from your work. That. So as much as you don't talk about your relationships, I know how you feel about anal bleaching. And I love this. Again, this is from the same stand-up show. The futility of vanity in the face of death. You don't get that with many stand-up shows. You don't get that line in many stand-up shows. Poo holes are brown and we're meant to die. That's the philosophy of your show, without giving too much away. But yes. I mean, it's, you know, death's an... I've done a show about death, and death is... my own mortality is playing on my mind more than it would have done at the moment. And it is a really interesting thing to tackle through comedy, either losing someone or one's own mortality, because it really, you know, I think a lot of people feel like if you're joking about something, then you're not taking it seriously. But I think it's the way to process, isn't it?
Well, there's sort of two things that I think are important there. Like, so it's hard to make jokes about death because, like, the classical definition of comedy is that it turns out well in the end. Or, you know, a kind of Aristotelian idea of comedy is that, you know, it ends happily for the characters, and death by necessity doesn't. But that narrative structure doesn't need to end at the death, or the point of the show doesn't need to be the death, or even if it is, it doesn't need to be a sad thing. There are different ways to tell that story. You know, the difference between a tragedy and a comedy is where you start, where you open the curtains and where you close the curtains. You can close the curtains when Romeo and Juliet hook up, and that's a great love story about two underage people who don't really know their own minds. But so that, I think it's hard to talk about death, but it can be done. And the other thing is that there's kind of two ways of doing comedy about tragedy or about sad things. And one of them I really didn't want to do with the trilogy. So that's that kind of Mel Brooks dark humour, where you take the threatening thing or the dangerous thing or the horrible sad thing and you pull the air out of it. You make it funny, you make it ridiculous, you make it dumb. You make it less weighty and serious and important by poking fun at it. I really didn't want to do that with my mum's story. I didn't want to make her seem ridiculous or the situation seem ridiculous. So the way I did that structurally was to do a funny thing and then a sad thing and then a funny thing and then a sad thing. And it was like the old movies where you run them together and you give the impression that it's all light because there are enough moments of light in among the darkness that you come back to light enough times that the audience feels safe and they feel reassured and they know that they can go with you to this dark place.
But you are making, by doing that, you're making people consider their own mortality, which is, again, I've spent my whole life considering my own mortality and yet I still think, I don't think I'm going to die. deep down. So when something happens that makes you think, oh, I could actually die, it's sort of like a little epiphany, because it's sort of, I think we feel that you feel that from your point of view you're the star of this film and they can't they can't take you out because it'll ruin the rest of the movie if we go, because we're the main characters. But it is quite hard to really contemplate it, right? Which, unless you've been faced with it.
Yes. Yeah, and then it's very hard not to contemplate it at all times and to not let it overshadow your life. I think you have to have some form of, not belief, some form of philosophy, some approach. For me, the helplessness of watching death, of being witness to this, was so profound that it shaped the rest of my life in terms of A, working too hard, B, what I think about my job in life. I don't really believe in an afterlife or anything like that, so I think my duty to my mum is to carry on the good things about her. The shadows that she cast into the world is my job to extend those shadows. So she was very good at talking to people. She was very interested in people. I'm not naturally that interested in people, but I have now, gotten better at that because it was such a wonderful thing about Mum. Like, she'd be in the hospital in some dreadful state with either her MS or later on with her cancer, and the nurse would walk in, and she'd been in the hospital for 6 hours, and you'd gone to get a cup of tea. The nurse would come in, and she'd be like, oh, this is Gerda. She's from Sweden. She has three children. You're just like, how do you do that? How do you care about somebody else when you're in pain or distress or trouble? She had this incredible quality about her that I think is the thing that I'd like to carry forward. And that's my kind of philosophy or approach.
I think what I really liked about the show is where you just get the audience to sing a song with you. And they readily they so readily join in. And it's lovely. It's everyone. And it just sort of reminds you that most people are just quite nice, I think, like, we've got this point where we think people are bad and there's complicated things in the world, and most people, actually, if you start singing a song with a banjo behind it that they know, they will just immediately join in. And it's just so simple what you do with that, but it really was heartwarming to me that just all these different voices, some singing well and not singing that well, just all got on board with that song. It's just a lovely moment.
Yeah, I really wanted people to feel human in that show and be aware of the humanity of the people around them. And that is such a nice thing. It's just such a nice thing to do, is to sing with people. And we don't do it enough anymore. Maybe Christmas carols is the only place.
Just because people don't do it very often, I was just thought, isn't it great that people join? There was, in one of your podcasts, you were talking, I think this was maybe Tea with Alice, which there is one with me on. That's one of our three long conversations.
Yes.
We've had.
Yes, indeed.
But you were talking about, this is something I've been thinking about social media, and it's something I've been trying to do but failing quite a little bit, is to every time that you feel like calling someone a cunt or being snarky, you know, someone says something stupid and, you know, you'd sort of swear back at them or you are dismissive. And your idea was to, rather than doing that, to not do it. My idea is to not do it, which I've been quite successful at, but not totally successful at, and just not put negativity into the world. But your idea is instead to go and say two nice things about somebody else, which I think...
Yeah.
But I think that could really... I don't know if people would do it, but it wouldn't take that many people to start doing it, because the power of positivity... It's interesting with the International Women's Day, where for 10 years I've done this, finding all the people asking when's International Men's Day and sort of taking the piss out of them for a good reason, I think. But then on last International Men's Day, I got everyone to say who their favourite man was and what, you know, who'd inspired them. And that was such a nice day. The day where I do the negative thing, which is, you know, self-defeating negative thing, is so galling and unpleasant to do. And the day where I got everyone just to say, just say one nice thing about one man, let's be positive about men, it was so lovely. And I think that's, that, you know, I don't know whether that's really just a switch that we can turn in our heads and that would all make it good, or because, like, you know, again, I think a lot, you were talking about this a lot in the shows, but people put on in social media have this pretense about being nice or saying, oh, I think this, but you know, actually just being a positive and nice person on social media, you're much more likely to spread ideas that way than by clamping down on someone for not having the right opinion about the subject that you think they should have and calling them a cunt. You know, it's not,
yeah,
that's not how to persuade people, is it?
No, that came from, I was walking in the street with a friend and a car hopped the curb and nearly hit me. And my friend, sort of, she stopped driving. She was in a four-wheel drive. She was one of these sort of eastern suburbs Sydney drivers, is a very small lady in a very big car with very big lips. It's a particular type of lady. And my friend said, what are you doing? Didn't you see that you could have hit Alice? And she looked shocked and upset. And he said, you bitch. And you could just see her whole face shut down. She went from really thinking about what she'd done in that moment to, this mean man was mean to me and I'm in the right. In just that second, it was when I was in my 20s, and it was so, like, it was such a profound, like, just watching her face change between one second and the next, between being open to change and growth and to being completely shut down. And it made me think, you know, how do you change people's minds? I've obviously, like, I'm obsessed with rhetoric and persuasive speech. That's my kind of academic background, and it's what I've always been interested in, is how you get an idea from your head into somebody else's head. Because for me, and again, maybe this is not for everyone, but one of the best feelings in the world is, where something connects and you get the idea. That light bulb moment or that epiphany, even if it's just a new fact, is just, this is so cool. And I want to share that. So for me, the process of getting it from my head into other people's head is what I'm really interested in. And you don't get ideas into other people's heads by shouting at them. You just don't. Like, it's so rare.
Any situation where I've had people, you know, berate you for something, it's very hard to make that, to then go, okay, I'm on your side now. All it does is sort of harden you up against, which again, you see again and again, people get obsessed about an idea or a political thing usually, and then they get criticized for it, and then rather than being open to it, they'll harden because they're being told they're wrong and told they're being awful. It's very hard to go, oh, you think I'm awful, oh, I'll change and be good then. You're more likely to harden up and go, no, I'm definitely right. Or at least, you know, the people who...
You defend yourself in the moment and you might think about it later. But it is also that thing of also people are not just attacking your actions very often. They will attack you as a whole. So if you did something wrong, they don't say you did this wrong thing. They say you are a wrong person. You're a kind of wrongness. And in being that kind of wrongness, you are part of a massive wave of wrongness, a whole history of wrongness. You are like every other person who has been wrong in this way. You are, you know, rather than you said something insensitive. That was an insensitive thing to say. That hurt my feelings. It's you're a Nazi, you know, like all of a sudden it's this massive generalization where you don't recognize yourself in their criticism because the criticism is so extreme. And even the person doing the criticizing probably doesn't feel that extremely. The nature of often online discourse is that it flattens things out, so you feel like you have to scream to punch through and to make a... You can't just say, oh, that was unpleasant. You have to say, that was the worst thing in the world. That's murder. In order to be heard, you feel like that because you're screaming at your screen and you're imagining the world through it. And you don't understand that on the other side of that, they're not receiving it from a distance. They're receiving it in their hand, in their pocket, in their heart at night when they're vulnerable and alone. This high volume intensity attempt to persuade them.
And I think it's interesting.
Sorry, I'm such a nerd about
this. No, it's good. But it's interesting. I think that by being critical and mean, it often comes from, you know, when someone seeks someone out in order to tell them that they hate them. I think that's obviously coming from a place of pain in the person doing it. And actually doing it, I don't think that it might give them a moment of feeling like, it might give them a moment of feeling like, oh, well, I've got one over on them. But it's actually such a negative thing that it probably just eats away more. And then actually going out and doing something that is positive, I think just makes you feel better about yourself as well. So it is interesting to go, rather than... I often said that to people, you know, rather than coming to find a comedian you don't like, why don't you go and find a comedian you do like and tell them that you like them? Because that'll make them happy, yeah. And they'll make you happy that you've spread that. I just wondered if that was, because that's sort of what you're doing. Is it work? Are you managed to keep up with that? And is it working for you? Or have you started?
It does work for me. It is that thing of like, it's a little artificial, it's a little cheesy, but it does, it works. And I really strongly believe that, like, you aren't just who you are. Like, you cultivate certain things in your character and your personality in the same way as with exercise, you know, you cultivate particular muscles and you get fit in certain ways and flexible in certain ways and unfit in certain ways and inflexible in certain ways. I think it's an incredibly important thing to think about your own mind in that way. And what am I feeding my mind? What am I cultivating? What weights am I lifting with my mind? What effort am I putting in? What am I building up? What am I letting go? Without being one of those people who's kind of self-help robot person.
I think there's a middle ground which isn't just like, I'm going to tell everyone I love them. I think it's just, you know, it's nice. It's lovely to get a compliment. You know, if it's delivered in the right way. The problem with the internet is some people think they're giving out compliments when they're just being weird and creepy. But what's wrong with you?
I
said you had a nice really, ass. Yeah. What's wrong with you? It was a compliment. I think
the weirdest one is the like very intrusive questions, as though they have a right. I had someone say, "How much do you weigh?"
Right.
The other day.
Yeah.
I was like, "Why? Like, we're never going to meet. How is this relevant to you?"
Well, I find it, as a comedian, the instinct is to come back, and I find it very hard. If someone's being offensive or rude or, yeah, over-familiar, I'd said something sarcastic about Meghan and Harry, about the people accused of, the hypocrisy of the papers, basically, but I couched it in sarcasm, knowing that some people would take it seriously, even though it was very extreme. And then someone got cross with me, said, you know, and they obviously agreed with me. And I said, look, I'm joking and I agree with you. And they were still going, no, but, you know, how dare you? And I just wanted to go, how can you be angry with someone who is saying the same thing as you? You cunt. I think I wrote out and then I did take deleted that one back.
Oh, so many, many horrible insults in my drafts folders. And I feel so... This is the other thing, though. If you don't send it, you feel really satisfied with yourself. You feel morally good for having done nothing. You've literally done nothing. And you're like, I'm a great person.
It is also fun, though, sometimes to, you know, respond to someone who's being a dick by really letting them have it. So that's the problem. That's my problem. Hey, let's quickly talk. So you've been working up. We all know about the Bugle, but there's a new podcast coming out called The Gargle.
Yes.
So tell us about what that is. Is it? Are there any episodes out yet? I haven't listened to it.
The first episode is coming out this weekend, and it's exciting for me. It's really exciting for me to work with Andrew Zaltzman and the whole Bugle team. They're so lovely, and they've been so good to me. I've been so lucky with that. But what I wanted to do was a show where I never had to write another Trump joke or another Brexit joke. This when we were planning this, Trump was still in power, and it was, I just wanted to do the kind of the satirical news thing, which I like that process of finding out how to take a serious story and make it funny, or take a complicated story and make it digestible, which I think for many people, satirical news is that. It's their way of understanding the news. So I wanted to do that, but I also have written, so like the news cycle is so repetitive now, particularly when it comes to politics, and this cycle is so upsetting, and I'm still, you know, I'm writing for the news quiz and I'm still doing the Bugle regularly, and I just didn't, like, you write the joke eventually after, you know, 100 times or whatever, you write the joke that you think encompasses Brexit, and that's, you're like, that's it, that's the joke, I don't want to write another joke, and then you have to do it again the next week. Like, for me with Brexit, it was, Brexit never has so much hot air lifted so few balloons, and for Trump it was, I wouldn't take an IOU from Trump if he wrote it on the money he owed me. And then, like, you're done. Like, that, for me, encompasses my feelings, and I've done the joke, and then now I have to do it again. So, it's like a glossy weekend magazine show, The Gargle. It's your weekend pull-out section of the audio newspaper for a visual world that is The Bugle.
It's great, but the Bugle's such a big success, and it's nice to have a spin-off. It's more work for you. It's
yes.
Crazy. But, yes, that's good. Well, I'm very much looking forward to that. If people want to... I mean, there's, you know, as with me, I sort of feel like no one can ever catch... No one new can ever catch up with what I've done. I think that must be true of you as well. But there's lots of great podcasts to dip into if you there's one about trolls as well, isn't there? There's a million.
Yes.
My goodness. Right, I'm going to ask you another question. Have you ever flown a kite, and have you done it successfully?
Yes, I have flown a kite. I have done it successfully as a child. Yeah, my dad took us out on a number of windy afternoons, me and my twin brother, and we flew kites. And it was a lot of fun. There's a kite festival down at Bondi Beach in Sydney every year, and that was an annual thing where we'd go, and there would be these huge, you know, very impressive kites in the sky, and people doing kite surfing, which is an incredible thing to watch, but also looks very stupid. It looks like a very stupid thing to do, but it also looks like a lot of fun, being sort of skimmed along the waves on the kite, and then they get lifted up into the air. But yeah, so I think we were inspired by the kite festival as children, so we'd go and fly our little kites.
I say I'm quite obsessed having kids about what they'll remember, and when those first memories come, and I kind of want my daughter to remember this great day we had with each other, and whether she will or not. But I think there's something about kites, because they're not an everyday thing. And they're sort of a little bit of, when they work, they're a little bit of magic. So I'm kind of hoping that that will be a memory for my daughter, but I don't know. You've frozen again on my screen. You're back. You're frozen.
I am back. I'm back. I'm trying to figure out what's happening here with the internet.
Yeah, it's going a little bit awry, but it will work in the podcast. And, you know, it's absolutely astoundingly incredible that we are having this conversation. I would never have thought I would never have thought of doing this, I don't think, without lockdown. I would never have thought, oh, why don't I do some just talking to people around the world? It's crazy that I wouldn't have thought of it, but it's become so easy to do it. And, you know, I've had worse connections with people who are, you know, 20 miles away than I have here. So it is sort of, it's astonishing. I wanted to ask you, as a twin, I know you don't do any material about your brother, but are you psychically connected to your twin, having spent those 9 months together?
Look, we spent a lot of time together as children as well. We sort of brought
each
other up.
Yeah, but it's the psychic bit inside.
Growing wild.
It's in utero that it happens.
No, I can look at him and tell what he's thinking, but I think that's more due to custom than any kind of inherent ability. Although I always wanted to be able, we have our own secret language. Yeah. Is that a thing?
Yeah, that's good. Well, that sort of stuff fascinates me. And can you still talk to each other in it now? Do you remember it?
Oh yeah, it's mainly an eyebrow code.
That's good. Do you get, as a twin, do you, as you're the same age, so my kids are different ages and they've got to a sort of fighty age now where the little one annoys the big one and the big one just enjoys inflicting a bit of pain on the little one. Do you, when you're going through life as a sibling who's the same age as your sibling, does that bring you closer together or drive you further apart? You're obviously close, but...
Yeah, we had a bickering phase, but for the most part, it was us against the world a little bit. So I like that.
Okay, yeah. And how far does the eyebrow language go?
He's a good little brother.
Is the eyebrow language? I should talk more about the eyebrow language. How complicated things can you? Yeah, you just started doing it. What complicated things can you say with your eyebrow? How is it? Just that's a surprise. Is it mainly that's a surprise? Because that's not like what a surprise. Oh, I'm a bit quizzical
that's
about this.
A surprise! I'm the Rock. That's basically it. That's it.
What's the most complicated thing you can say in eyebrow language?
We need to talk about this later. this is weird as I think it is. Help, rescue me. This man's a creep.
Good.
Yeah.
If you just sent that out to your brother just now. This man's obsessed with our eyebrows. Help, get me out of here. I'm very, that's very exciting.
I had a lady tell me
that
I should get my eyebrows waxed.
Okay, that would ruin it.
You need to get your eyebrows waxed.
Well, my eyebrows have started...
Once you get them waxed, you'll never go back.
Yeah. My eyebrows have sort of started like... either going light or falling. Look, I've got this... I used to have very dark eyebrows, and now there's just that bit, and there is something here, but... Getting old's terrible.
Put mascara in them.
I might have to put them in. Should I just have very dark eyebrows and nothing else? Do you think anyone would notice Sunday next
nothing
week?
Nothing else.
Just like big brown lines. Oh, goodness. Look, it's been... I really appreciate you getting up so early. I'm glad we delayed it by an hour. And that wasn't out of politeness. That was just because I had something else going on. Didn't realise it was quite so early there. So no, thank you very much for getting
up. It's the
deal. And...
Thank you so much for having me.
No,
it's been so lovely.
It's been great. I absolutely heartily recommend everything that you do to all of the people who... I must stop doing this because then they'll go and listen to your podcast and they won't have time to listen to my podcast. I must stop recommending...
It's not a zero-sum game. I hope so. It's not a zero-sum game. A rising tide lifts all boats.
Okay, I hope so.
You can only be in one boat at a time.
I hope you're right. I think it's important that the best thing gets the listeners. So, you know... You're better than me, and people should transfer their allegiance. I think you look like the product of a Greek god and a heraldic lion, and that is why people should go to your podcast, because that is your look. And on that bombshell, the eyebrows have said help, and we've lost her, I think.
She's lying. Who's on top?
She's just.
I was okay. I was making a filthy joke. Yeah,
she's hung up in disgust. Oh, she's back. Look, thanks. The internet's trying to tell us it's time to end.
No, I am back. I was just making a filthy joke.
I love filthy jokes. I'll listen to it.
Come
on
my recording.
Thanks so much, Alice. next week we're doing one with an American next week. We've got Mary Lynn Rice Cub, I believe is how you pronounce her name, from 24 and the Larry Sanders Show. She's awesome. Mr. Show as well. She worked with David Cross. So do tune in for that. For now, ladies and gentlemen, the amazing Alice Fraser. Thank you so much. Goodbye. You have been listening to Rahulastapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Alice Fraser. The music you are listening to is by Pest. You know that. Why am I telling you anything? You know all of this. You know that I'm indebted to my friend and director, producer, Chris Evans. Not that one or that one, or the one from the Daily Telegraph, or the politician ones, or any of the other ones. This one, the Go Faster Straight one. I'm indebted to British Comedy Guide, and everyone at ACAS, everyone at Ian Tunes' place. You know who you are. I'm also indebted to Kathleen McKeegan, who does research for this podcast by writing down everything that happens in on her wonderful website, rahalastapa.com. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production. Go to GoFasterStripe.com/badges, become a monthly badger, get all kinds of benefits. Check your balls, check your boobs, check your boobs, even if you're a man. Do go to the doctors if you have any concerns. The NHS, despite everything that is being thrown at it, is a fantastic place. Thanks for listening. See you next time, my fan friend.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Ever Googled your own name? Prepare for a shock, because your personal info, including addresses and phone numbers, is out there, especially with the recent hacks at some big phone and healthcare companies. But here's where Aura steps in. Aura scans the dark web for your sensitive information and sends real-time alerts. Aura also actively requests that your information be removed from data broker sites, putting you back in control. Aura provides you with a complete online safety toolkit, credit and transaction monitoring, a secure password manager, a privacy-enhancing VPN, parental controls, and more. Try Aura risk-free with a 14-day trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety. Rest easy with Aura. Visit aura.com/safety today.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.